Today on Coding 101, we are breaking it down. We're going to show you how to output to a file, and we're getting back into lists.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Coding 101 is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code CODING514. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code CODING.
Welcome to Coding 101. It's the show where we bring you into the wonderful world of the Code Monkey. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I am Shannon Morrison. For the next 30 minutes, we are going to get you all learned it up on everything you need to know to be a Python code warrior.
I like getting learned it up.
Learned it up.
I need to be learned it.
I just made up a word.
Now, we've been getting kind of complicated the last couple of weeks.
We did. That whole YouTube API thing totally threw me off. I was very confused.
Yeah. So, you know, what we're going to do for this episode is we're actually going to step back a little bit because we've been getting emails from people who are saying, I like the Python module. It's very accessible, but maybe if you could step through some of the main topics so we could catch our breath. And you know what? We want to do what you need.
I think that's a great idea. So last week we discussed the YouTube API, but we also discussed sorting as well.
Yes.
So I wanted to give my very short and very easy to use example, just so you guys have a little brief review of sorting. So I created a new idle code. I'll show you my code. So this is very similar to what Padre showed us last week, where you have a variable called sort numbers, and then it has a whole range of numbers. And these are totally jarbled up. They aren't from, you know, minimum to maximum or anything like that. To get them sorted, though, I use this code, sort numbers.sort, parentheses, and then a semicolon.
Right. And we should note that that is a built-in function, a method in Python. Sort
it is.
with the little parentheses. All that means is that you're using something that's already built into Python, so you don't have to code it yourself.
Exactly.
And in this instance, you've created a list called sort numbers with those entries in the list, and then the way that you invoke the method is you type in the name of the list, period, and then the function you want to run on that list.
And this is my function.
Boom.
So after I hit that, I say for these entries in the range from 0 to 5, so 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, print sort numbers entries. So this is going to print the sorted range from 0 to 5 for me.
Right.
And then it just says press enter to exit. So when I close this, and I'll go ahead and open it up, it automatically prints from 2 all the way up to 74,533 and then just asks you to exit. So you'll see that all of the numbers are automatically sorted from the smallest to the largest.
And as we mentioned last week, you know, this is one of those fundamental things that you absolutely need to do. I mean, manipulating data inside of your program is what you program for.
Yes,
unless you're actually doing something useful, then you're not really programming. So sort is a big part of that.
Would you like to see a couple of viewer examples?
Yes, I would.
Awesome. So the first one we got was from Daniel. This is a book sorting one. This is a Python code that he created that will take a whole bunch of names of books, page numbers, titles, and authors, and it will sort them depending on how you want it sorted, by either page numbers, title, or the author name. So if I open up his code, I'm going to go ahead and run it first. So it's going to take a text document, which I have downloaded right here. It's called books.txt. And it asks you, how do you want to sort this? So I'm going to say, I want to sort it by title, so number one, and then hit enter. And it's going to sort them by title. So you see that it goes, the following was written. Also, it outputs new files, so we're going to get into this later.
We're going to talk about those are your spoilers.
Yeah, so I'm not going to show you how exactly to do that quite yet, but you'll see down here it starts from B, build your own website, blah blah blah, all the way down to the very last ones, and then I can also sort again by author, hit number 2. So it's going to sort again by author and number 3 by page count. And when I do that, you'll see a different listing of the books. Now, when I exit out of here, you can see these new text files as well, by author, by page count, and by title. If I open books, it's very simple. It's just a list out of his books. And then he has separated page numbers by authors and everything else by this little character right here.
Yeah. And again, that's a fundamental part of programming, which is if the data only works in the program and there's no way to get either external data in or internal data out, then it's not so useful. So what we've seen is we already have the method for pulling data into your program.
Exactly.
We're going to show you today how you get it out.
Yay! Well, before that, we have one more example
for you.
Let's
do that, please.
This one is from Lionel. So this one takes some code. It pulls some API information from 2 sources, and then it sorts that into a listing for you. So he's also taking the YouTube API that we discussed last week.
Which freaked some people out.
You can tell that Lionel is quite more advanced than some of us are. Like me, I don't fully understand APIs, but he got on it, and he was like, I can totally do this. So when I run his code right here, double-click on that. So it's pulling some Python API data, and then it gives you weather information. So it's going to say, let's see, sort Telize API data. So I'm going to hit 1. And then press Enter to see the full unsorted API from Telize.com. So he's pulling API information from Telize.com. When I hit Enter, it gives you a listing of all the information about yourself. So it gives me, you know, Petaluma, California, that's where we are, Comcast, cable communications, blah, blah, blah. And then press Enter to see that data sorted by key, by value, and then I can hit exit. Bam.
Very
pretty
awesome.
Cool, right?
But I'm gonna make this plea. Chat room, you just saw one of our IPs. Please don't hit it. I know you're going to want to, but I will say this. Maybe we have a know-how or project on building a honeypot, so maybe you do want to hit it. I don't know. No, I mean, see, again, that's the sort of stuff that I love. I mean, obviously, he has way more experience
than the
programs that we've been bringing onto the show.
Yes.
But that's the level of functionality that you can get out of an API.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's what we've been trying to tell people, which is anytime you can reuse code or reuse a package that someone else has written so that you don't have to actually write it and you can just throw it some variables and have data come back, that's always a great thing.
I agree. And I do want to say thank you both to Lionel and Daniel for sharing their code with us and to everybody else that shared code in the past week. We also had Jerry, Eric, Patrick, Daryl, and Neverin also share their code in the Google Plus community.
Woot.
So unfortunately, we don't have time to share all of them, but each
We'd
of
love
them is
to.
Really
yeah.
good.
You know, I've noticed that on the G Plus community, there's been a lot of activity of people sharing code.
There's been tons.
And it happens
like... It's so exciting. I love it.
I love it, yeah. And that's actually another reason why you want to be part of that G Plus community.
Yes.
Even if you're freaking out and you don't have any code to contribute to the community yet, take a look at the examples that people are writing, especially people who know way more than the level that we're teaching.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
And we talked about this in the first module, one of the best ways to learn programming is to get in there and just start poking around. Get the code from someone else that works and figure out what
Break
you
it,
can change.
And then figure out how to fix it.
Break it.
So I'm currently working on trying to sort my list, my wedding list, into a alphabetical order. I haven't quite figured it out yet, but I'm really, really hoping I can get that fixed by next week so I can show you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, anytime you can do something that's useful to you,
yes,
that's
a
little light bulb moment.
So speaking of useful,
mm-hmm.
I hear there's a pretty sweet... sponsor.
Yeah. So, you know, we're creative professionals, right?
We are,
I mean, some
yes.
of us more than others. I can't design pictures to save my life, but I do like making content. And one of the things about making content is you need the assets to make that content right, which is why we welcome Shutterstock to the Coding 101
Yay!
Family. Now, what do you get with Shutterstock? With Shutterstock, you get a multitude of options for the type of content that you need in your project, whether it's for your website, for a publication, for an advertisement, for a video, or any other type of project. You can choose from over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips all in one site. Now, how does this work, you may ask? Well, it works because Shutterstock sources images from around the world and puts them at your fingertips. Now, many contributors to Shutterstock are professional photographers and artists. They do this for a living.
Shutterstock reviews each image individually for content and quality before adding it to its library. They don't want to give you stuff that is just garbage. They don't want you to have to sort through pages and pages and pages of chaff to find the one stock image that you want. Rather, they help to curate it for you. And you can download any image in any size and pay only one price. Shutterstock gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level, and they make it easy. Shutterstock has sophisticated search tools. So right now, our TD Brian is looking for hacker, and these are some of the images that are coming up inside the Shutterstock search tool. With these search tools, you can search and drill down by subject, color, file type, gender, emotion, and more. For example, I want to look for programmer, but I want to specifically look for Python programmer. He entered in those search terms, and believe it or not, Shutterstock was able to give me just the images, just the assets that are associated with programming in Python. It sounds like magic, but it's just really that good. It's a really accurate drill-down search engine. Now, Shutterstock has an award-winning iPad app, which means you can search on the go for your mobile device and use it to display images during presentations. They also have shareable lightboxes, which means you can share images to a lightbox gallery, then access them anytime and share them with other team members. Shutterstock really is a global marketplace. They have multilingual customer service in more than a dozen international countries and full-time customer support throughout the week. Now, today, you know, Brian just showed you some of the images that we found for Hacker and Python programming, but I'm going to throw a curveball at him. I want you to look for Priest. What happens when you type in priest? Let's see what comes up. Oh, actually, I probably should have checked this ahead of time. But Brian, is it good stuff?
Spell it right, Brian.
Yeah, do you now just spell it? There we go. Well, what happens if you type, you know, here, that's another curveball here. Type in Jesuit priest. I want to see if we have a subheading for us. Do you now just type, spell Jesuit? Oh, wow.
Hey,
oh, my goodness. Okay, that's I didn't think that was actually going to work, but
awesome.
Here you go. They're actually showing some of the images from Jesuit institutions around the world. This is the kind of magical search that you get when you use Shutterstock. Folks, I tell you, it's one of the best ways to get assets. It's the best way to get photos and videos for whatever project you're working on. It's Shutterstock. Now, you can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. There's no credit card needed. You just start your account and you begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could look like and save favorite images to that lightbox to review later. Now, once you decide to purchase, you can use offer code CODING514, that's CODING 514, and new accounts will receive 20% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 20% off new accounts, use the offer code CODING514. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of Coding 101.
I'm ready.
You ready?
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready for this?
Oh, I'm totally ready for this.
I'm sorry. We just had to do
that. We
don't
want to make everybody.
That was a little bit of dance. Okay. So we're going to.
Dance off.
No.
Okay. So we have a lot of information to get through today.
We do. Because what we're going to do is we're going to back up a little bit. And for someone who might be drowning in a lot of the fire hose type. Yeah, exactly. We're going to take you through some of the steps. And we can't obviously take you through all of the episodes that we've done.
Of course.
But let's take you back and rewind the clock so that you can at least
get. Do a little bit of a review.
Yes. Before we get into pushing data out to an external file. Now, the first thing we have to start with, of course, are variables. Now, we remember variables, right?
We do, yeah. We've been talking about those since the beginning of time.
Yeah, beginning of programming. I mean, variables are the things that make programs go. If you don't have variables, you don't have a place to store values. You don't have a place to be able to change values, right?
Exactly.
And remember when we did the first module with C#, variables had to be defined. You had to tell it at the beginning.
Yes, you had to tell it whether it was a number or a letter or a string. Mm-hmm.
String, exactly. We talked about in Python how it's different because they use dynamic variables, which means that the type of variable is dynamically allocated as you put data into that variable.
Which is really cool, so you don't have to worry about actually defining it.
Right. So like when we were making our C# programs, what we would typically do is you'd see at the top, we'd list off all the variables that we're going to use.
Yes.
It's type of integer, type float, type. Don't do that in Python. In Python, you can just conjure variables out of nowhere. Just give it a name.
It's like magic.
It's like magic. And when a value gets pushed into that variable, it will automatically know what type of data it's dealing with.
I love that. Why can't every language be able to do that?
Well, I mean, they could. And actually, most of the newer languages do.
But you got to remember, I mean, when we're talking about the embedded programming base, there's a lot of us who grew up with the old style.
Yes, that's true.
So don't forget us. You know, we're still here.
You old people. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, so now we've got variables. Now I just wanted to get out of the way. Let's show you really quick what it looks like to play with some of this data. This was one of the very first functions that we played with. This is called the raw input function.
Yes.
All it does is it allows you to wait for user input.
Yes.
After printing out whatever is between the parentheses here. So I could have put the name of a variable without the quotation marks, and it would have printed the variable. In this case, all it's doing is printing out the string, please type your name. Now, remember how I said you could dynamically assign variables? That's what it's doing right here. I haven't told Python what variable one's going to be.
Right.
All it's doing is it's waiting for information to be pushed into it, and then it will dynamically assign it. In this case, variable one is going to be filled.
My name.
With whatever raw input finds.
Okay.
And then it's going to print back whatever was in variable one.
Right.
So if I run this, it should look just like this. So my name is Padre. And if I hit enter, it should type back, my name is Padre.
Yay. Now, I do see an extra space in between is and Padre. So could you have deleted that extra space by just adding it at the end of your raw
Absolutely.
Input?
Absolutely. Yeah, I added one just because I realized it was all squished together. But
got it.
Yeah, you know, in the code, you can make it come out any way you want.
Cool.
So that was one of the very first functions
nice
that we played
and easy.
With. Nice and easy. No muss, no fuss, nothing hard about it. Now, the second function that we really played with was the isDigit. You may remember it back in episode 3. Yeah, we started talking about sanitizing data, which was perfect because that happened during the heart bleed,
yeah.
Right? Which again, you know, it's of course it was more complicated with
yes,
heart bleed,
it was.
But essentially that's what happens when programmers don't make sure that they're receiving the data they think they're supposed to get, right? So if you look at this is just a variation of the. I think this is the exact code that we used for episode 3. We use this function called isDigit. And all isDigit is it takes a value. In this case, it's taking the value of phones, and it's saying, is it a number?
Ah, yes.
If it's a number, then yes, go. If not, then no, it stops.
Right.
And in this particular case, this was a function that a program that Dell wrote. We start off with a variable called clean set to false.
Ah.
Then we have a while loop, and a while loop will continue to run as long as clean is equal to false. So in other words, this loop that we're about to write here will continue to run until something changes the value of clean to true.
Got it. Okay.
Which is what you want to do, right? This is sanitizing.
Yes.
Stay
yes.
in this loop until I get what I expect.
Yes.
Okay. Then I have these two inputs. Phones and laptops. How many phones have I broken? How many laptops have I dropped?
And we're talking about variables.
Right. There we are. There's the variables again. So I enter in two different numbers. Now, this if statement, what it does is it uses the isDigit function to say if the variable of phones is a digit and if the variable of laptops is a digit, then clean equals true, which means the while loop stops.
Got it.
Right.
That totally makes sense.
And then it goes on to the next line, which just says print, and then we use another function called int, which makes sure that it turns it into an integer, sure that it's actually a number that it can play with. Phones and laptops, and there we go. So if I run this, this is what it looks like. Oh, function F5. So how many phones have I broken? I've never broken a phone. How many laps have I dropped? Oh, like 200. Okay, boom. Okay, and there we go. So
perfect.
Again, nothing startling, nothing earth-shattering, but when you start adding it up to all the other ways that we've learned you to actually modify data, it's pretty cool.
Okay, yeah, I got it so far.
Good.
What's next?
Good. What's next? I believe we're going to be covering lists.
Yay!
Yeah, so this was us getting into structured data. And the reason why structured data is important is, well, when we're dealing with variables that, you know, in the past we've just thrown a bunch of variables together, right?
That's true.
Which is useful, but wouldn't it be nice if somehow I could group together all the similar variables into one area?
So much more useful.
Right. For example, let's take your wedding list, right?
Your
RSVPs. I could have 1,000 different variables for the 1,000 different entries.
Yeah,
or I could have one list that says wedding reservations with 1,000 entries in it.
So much easier than typing them all in separately.
Structured data, that's what we work with. So let's go ahead and go to my computer, Brian. And what you see here is this is the one that we used in the episode. I have a list called C101 Team. Mm-hmm. And then I grouped in the list all the people who are associated with C101.
Yes.
We've got me, we've got you, we've got Dale Chase, and we've got Cranky Hippo.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah.
Now, so this will create a list called C101 Team with entries 0 to 3, because remember, we start at 0.
Yes.
So there's 4 entries, with the values of Padre SJ, Stubbs, Dale Chase, etc. Now, this, the print, as you can see, just you print out the name of the list plus the index that you want to output. And so when I output this, it looks just
Padre
like...
Padre SJ would be 0.
This. Bam.
Yep.
I could space this out a lot better if I really wanted to, but...
Cranky Hippo is number 3.
Boom, right?
Got it.
Okay, so list. Really, there's nothing complicated there. The only reason why we're talking about it is because we want to always have a better way to organize our information. And
yeah,
lists
absolutely.
Are a great way to do it.
I love
structured
lists.
Data. We love it, folks. We love
Me
it.
Me too.
All right, so... Now we've got variables, we've got lists, we've got a way to get information into the program, we've got a way to make sure that it's what we expect, right?
Yes. What's next?
Well, we remember the decision makers?
Oh.
Yeah. So even if we've got...
Ifs and else and loops.
If and else and... Right. So let's talk about those loops first, because we've already done a little bit of that when we looked at the one of the previous examples. This is one of the easiest loops you can write. This is a while loop. And this looks almost exactly like the while loops that we did in C#. I have counter is equal to 0. While the counter is... So it's a variable called counter.
Yes.
I set it to 0.
Got it.
The while loop will continue to run as long as counter is less than 5. Then inside the loop, and remember, we know it's inside the loop because
it's indented.
Precisely, right. Exactly. White space matters in Python, folks. It's indented so I know that each time the while loop runs, counter is going to become counter plus 1.
Okay.
So it's just an increment by 1.
Right.
And then print counter. And so when I run this program, I get this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Perfect.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Very easy to understand. That's what a while loop does. Now let's go over to for loops. For loops are slightly more more complicated, but not a whole lot. It looks different than the loops inside of C# because my for loop, at the very beginning, I know exactly how many times it's going to run.
That's true.
Right, because I gave it 2 arguments, where it starts and where it stops. So it's saying for counter, and I'm declaring the variable here, counter, while the counter is in the range between 0 and 8, print the counter.
So I don't remember. Will it run 8 times or 9 times?
Well, let's find out. So what happens when I run this program? I get something that looks like this.
1, 2. So 8 times.
8 times, right?
Great.
And that's because, remember, when we talk about pretest and post-test loops, it's going to run when it's 0.
Right.
Because it pretests it, right?
Yep.
And then it's going to continue to run, but that last time that it runs through, when it increments the counter to 8, it's going to say, I'm no longer in the range.
Right.
I stop. Yep.
Okay.
That actually confused a lot of people. All right. So we've got the loops. Now let's get into the if else
Yay!
Statements.
Again, these are super handy.
These are, the logical tree. Remember from module 1, we talked about taking a problem out of the real world and turning it into computer language. Well, that's really if else statements. Computers like to think in binary, either yes or no. And so if else statements allow me to say yes or no. Is it this? Is it that? Is it this?
It's
kind of
like turning on a switch. It's either on or it's off.
Right, exactly. And that's really what an if-else statement looks like. And so if you look at my console, I had a very simple function that I wrote here. I have a whole number A. I have a whole number B. And then I have a series of if-else statements. Now, I have if, elif, which means else if, and else.
Yes.
So this is all the basis. There's no possible number that you can enter that's not going to fall in one of these 3 categories.
Right.
So let's say I put in the number 2 and the number 4. So if A is equal to 2 and B is equal to 4. Well, then I get to the first statement. Is 2 less than 4?
Yes.
Yes. Then it just prints A is less than B and it stops.
Cool.
Okay. Now let's say I put in 4 and 2. So A is equal to 4 and B is equal to 2. It's going to go to that first statement. Is A less than B? So in other words, is 4 less than 2?
And it's not.
It's
so
not.
It'll move on.
It'll move on, right. So it'll ignore the print that's associated with the if, and it will move on to the elif, which is A equal to B. So is 4 equal to 2?
Okay.
And the answer for that is hell no.
No.
Right. 4 is not 2, right? So it's going to move on to the next one, and the next one is sort of the catch-all. Well, if it's not less than B, if it's not equal to B, then it must be greater.
B is less than A.
Than B. Right, exactly. And that's what it would print. So let's go ahead and make sure that works. So if we run this, I'm going to enter in 5 and 4. And there we go.
B is less than
4
A.
4 is less than
Perfect.
5.
Boom. Yay!
Right. And that's, again, it's very simple.
Yes.
But crazy handy, especially when you start nesting those things.
I agree.
Because then you can make your computer kind of smart.
Oh, I love all this review. This is perfect.
Right.
It's bringing back everything.
It brings back stuff, and it's really a good way to sort of lead up to what we're going to get to.
Absolutely.
Because, you know what, I'm actually going to skip sort, because you covered sort really well.
Oh, thank you.
Right, yeah. you run it, and it sorts what's in the list.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about external data. Specifically right now, let's talk about bringing data into your program. So here's what we've got. We have a text file, a function here. So the variable is called text file, and I'm going to set it to open. And then I'm going to give it the path to the file that I actually want it to open. Mm-hmm. And I want it to open a file called nunyobiz.txt. Okay. Now, you will notice that right here, there's this R. That's actually important. We glossed over it previously because it wasn't important. Now you need to know it.
Read,
right, exactly. So I'm going to be reading this. I'm going to open this text file for reading. Now, I'm not actually putting the text file into the variable called text file. What I'm doing is I'm setting the pointer. So I'm telling it, go ahead and find out where in memory we're reading this file in.
Ah, okay.
Then the next part here, now I'm saying the text from file is equal to text file.read. It's actually taking what's in the text file.
It's giving you that name, that text from file name.
Exactly. And it's going to read it into that string variable. So that entire file is now located inside this variable.
Got it. Okay.
All right. And now I'm going to do, I'm using a sort list, so I'm reading it into an array, and then I'm just outputting it. So what we have here, let me show you what the file looks like. Nunyobiz is just filled with a bunch of numbers, right? So if I go ahead and run this now, it's just going to read out whatever's in that file.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Now, that's not so useful because it's just doing a data dump of what's in the file,
right.
But the important thing is that data is now in the program. So if I wanted to, say, sort it or play with it or mess around with it, boom.
Oh, mind blown. I just think I figured out why my program wasn't working. I wasn't inputting the information before trying to sort it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just trying to sort it while
you were trying to sort
it
that the thing that you... Yeah, exactly. You have to bring it into the memory first, then you can sort it.
I figured it out.
Boom.
Yes.
All right. So we got that for next time.
Now I want to do it.
Now, okay, here's what we're going to be covering today.
Oh, boy.
We need a way to get the data back out to a file. It's cool. It's cool to have data coming in, but unless I have a way to actually hand it off to someone without giving them my computer,
right?
It's kind of useless, right?
I agree, yeah.
So remember how I told you that R was going to be important in the open?
Yes.
I'm doing the same thing here. So this is almost
a
mirror.
You have a W.
I have a W. So I'm writing...
Oh,
okay.
Cool.
So what this is going to do is it's going to ask me to type a test string. Then it's going to open a file, but it's going to open it for writing, not for reading. And then it's going to push that string into the external file, and then it's going to close it.
That's awesome.
Right, so if I run this, and let's go and do this. It's like, hello, Snubs.
Hi.
All right, it ends the program. Now, if I go ahead and jump over to... Oh, my gosh, I have so many tabs open right now. where did it go? Hold on.
File Explorer.
There you are. Oh, no. Wait. Bam. Okay, now if I go to the right, which was the file that I created... Hello, Stubbs.
That is so cool.
Right. And again, super simple demonstration. But what we're going to do now is we're going to show you how you could take data in from a file, do all those things that we just showed you how to mess with data, right? So raw input, playing with variables, doing is-else statements, while loops.
You're telling me I can take those wedding RSVPs, that huge list that I created, I can input all that information, I can tell Python to sort it, and then just output all the sorted information
Boom.
Back out. So then I can use it in an Excel spreadsheet.
You can use it in Excel or anything else.
I can send it to my vendors. Oh, man. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, I know. It's good stuff, which means we're going to bring in the code word. But before we bring in the code word, you know what, Snubs? This is all cool, and this is great. You know, this is a nice way to get data out of a program. But once you get the data out of a program, you really need a place to present it. You want a place to share it, like those invitations. Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice to have a website where you could push that data to?
I agree. I totally agree. And I like putting information on websites. In fact, I used to do that when I was a little kid. I would make little anime websites,
right.
But they were so ugly back
in
the day.
It's
a lot easier now.
It's easier, but you know what? I just don't know who I should choose. There's so many
out there. I'm thinking you should choose Squarespace.
Oh, all right.
Have you heard of Squarespace?
I think I have, but tell me more.
This is the site you want to go to create your own domain, your own website with a unique and beautiful feel. If you've ever used Squarespace before, you know what I'm talking about. They're constantly improving their platform. They have new features, new designs, even better support than you've ever seen before, and beautiful designs. So when you create a website on here, you can choose over 25 beautiful templates, and they're gorgeous templates. I mean, look at those. They're beautiful. For you to quickly build your own personal or business site. In fact, I've actually shared this Squarespace with a lot of my friends who are, you know, starting to be their own entrepreneurs. They want to create their own site to say, hey, I'm a graphics designer. I want to create a website to show off what I can do. So they go to Squarespace and they create something, bam, in like a couple of hours and they're done. They're ready to go. It also has a really nice mobile experience too. Squarespace has developed templates with responsive designs, which means that your site automatically restructures to look great on any device.
That's super important.
Have you ever been to a site that looks totally janky on your smartphone?
And you're kind of scrolling. You're like, I can't see anything.
Oh, I can't pinch. What's going on here? Oh, I can't even see what that text says. Or you double click and it just goes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Those
are the words. I mean, it doesn't matter how good your website is if it doesn't automatically adjust for the device on which it's being used. Your laptop, your tablet, your phone. It just looks amateur.
And then I don't want to go there. Well, Squarespace does all that work for you, so you don't even have to worry about fixing it yourself. They do all the code on the back end for you, for your smartphone, for your tablet, or your computer. So it looks great anywhere. And it's easy to use. So if you want some help, if you need any, if you have any questions or anything like that, Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, there is a completely redesigned customer help site for easy access to self-help articles and video workshops.
Bam.
Also, hosting is included. Ha ha! Squarespace takes care of the hosting with a distributed network that does not go down. And I'm telling you, folks, even with like our sites that I've used before and people that have signed up with Squarespace that I've told about, their sites never go down, no matter how many people go to it. It's also inexpensive. I mean, you're not going to find a good deal like this. It starts at $8 a month, and it includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year, which, personally, I did that, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't even have to worry about anything else. And their code is gorgeous because they take as much pride as they do on the front end as they do in the back end. So everything is going to look great, and it's super, super easy. In fact, you don't really even need to know code to create your own website on Squarespace. You can just drag and drop things. You can upload blogs just like they're doing on here. You can edit images. It's so easy. They even have a developer platform, though, if you are a programmer. If you want to really, really dig into the site customization and the developer accounts that never expire while in development. So you can take as much time that you need before launching your site, and you can pay nothing until you go live. So the development platform, these features complete control, so you can edit all the code that affects the display of your website, even lines of HTML and CSS and JavaScript. All of it's under your control. There's also Git and SFTP repositories, so version controls come standard. You can connect to template files via Git or SFTP if you need to. And there's plenty of other developer tools. Less pre-processing, there's JSON templating, script comboing, Retina-ready responsive image handling. Hello, so it's totally up to date. So I want you guys to check it out. There's a free 2-week trial with no credit card required, and you can start building your own website. If you decide to sign up for Squarespace, you can make sure to use the offer code CODING, coding, for 10% off. And show your support of Coding 101. We love it. And I want you guys to love it, too. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Coding 101. So just remember, if you guys want to build a really nice website, a better web awaits with Squarespace.
Do it now.
Do it now.
Now.
Do it now.
Well, actually, you know what we should do now? We should...
I'm thinking we should say hello to our code word.
I think so. Let's welcome back to the show Mr. Dale Chase. He's the engineer / artist extraordinaire.
Yay!
From Discovery.
I am here.
What's
Whoa.
Up?
Get to decoding.
Get to decoding.
Oh, I don't know what's going on with that.
Do now.
Go. Now, Dale, we gave you a little bit of entree here because, you know, we went back through some of the stuff that we've done. Obviously, you've done a great job in pushing forward the folks.
Yes.
They kind of freaked out a little bit on the YouTube API, but I think they understand why it's important. So we've teased it. We've showed them what it basically looks like to push data out to an external file. But now you're going to give us the real deal, yeah?
Yeah, well, how to write that data to a file, which is super handy. So I actually have some. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna bring in some song lyrics and change their case from all lowercase to from all uppercase to lowercase, and then save that new string of song lyrics to a file.
And this is exactly what we've been talking about, which is the ability to take something into the program, process it, do something useful, and then give back a useful file.
This is perfect.
This is exactly what... Okay, so the code for this must be like pages and pages long, right? I mean, it's going to be tremendous.
I think it's like 7 lines, I think.
I don't believe you. Show us.
It's like 8. It's like 10 lines.
Wow.
It's like 10 lines.
That's pretty good. All right. So we've seen that first line before. So the path to file is that's just you're setting the pointer. You're saying, okay, this is where the file actually exists. Then you're going to go ahead and open. Why do you have to open a file? I mean, I know some people have been asking this before. We went over open W and open R, so open reading, open writing. But what exactly does that mean? Why do I have to do that step?
It just kind of gets it ready to be worked with. You're letting the computer know that you want to bring this file into memory because you're going to do something with it at some point.
Right. Oh, actually, one quick thing. Could you go back to my computer, Brian? We have to show people this because they kind of freaked out the last time. When you see this in the example code, folks, this is path to file. So the people who were writing me and saying it doesn't work, that's because you need to put your own path.
Here, I can show you.
This is a local path, right.
So, for example, if you still have my computer, if I go up here and I click on this little folder icon right up here, it gives me my own path. So I just copy that and then include at the very end the name of my file that I want to include. So if I wanted to open in Python books by author.txt, I would just include that to the end and just copy and paste this entire line up here.
Right. So just remember that when you're writing this for yourself, don't use our paths because our paths will be nothing to your computers. I'm sorry, Joe. I had to cover that just because I got like 40 emails from that.
No, it's fine. And also, if you're on a Mac, if you just drag that file into the terminal, it'll also give you the path to that file.
That's awesome.
Right. Exactly.
What?
but if there are spaces in that file, you'll have to remove any slashes that will come from that.
Right. And exactly. PC Guy 8088 in the chat room, he says this exactly. Normally, you wouldn't hard code that path. That path would be assigned to a variable, and then the variable would be, it would like read from the directory, or
right.
It would use a function to actually figure out where the file is.
Yes.
Yeah. But we're hard coding it because we want to make this easy for you.
Totally. I guess it's worth mentioning, that's kind of why I've got this in all caps here, because it's meant as to be a constant, you know, it's something that won't change throughout the program.
Right.
So that's a good point to possibly touch upon at some point. I just want to just jump over to, I guess I'll just explain how this works. So yeah, so we're opening the file, getting it ready to be read and assigning it to Rhymes file. And then I'm reading the contents of the file into this variable Rhymes, and then I'm closing the file.
Okay, now there's another question. People asked us about our program when we did the external data segment, which is, why didn't we close it before? What's important about closing a file? Why do we use that function?
It's good to let the computer know that you're done using it for this case right now.
Right.
You don't want to accidentally do anything with it, or you don't want the computer to accidentally do anything with it.
You
know, you want to just close it and make sure that it is good and wrapped up.
Yeah, it's good programming, folks. If anytime you open a file, you really should close it. We didn't do it last time.
Yeah, we didn't do it.
I got lazy. Sorry.
And so then I'm using this built-in function here, lower, which will take the contents of the string and set them all to lowercase.
Oh, and so then I'm assigning.
Yeah. But we use it the same way as we use the sort function. Remember, you just you type the name of whatever's going to be sorted, and you type in sort. This is we type anything that we want to become lowercase, and we use the function lower.
So alternatively, could I put upper and get uppercase?
That's correct.
Bam.
I'm smart.
Right here.
And so I assign that back to Rhymes. And then I now open this. I'm opening the same file again. I just want to rewrite that file. Oh. So I'm opening the same file again, but now instead of using R, I'm using W because I just want to write to it. Mm-hmm. And there are several modes that you can do. You can actually open a file and write to it appending lines to it.
So there's
several uses that you can do, but we're just going to focus on this for now. But just so you know that there's more that you can do
reading and writing, the basic modes that you can use. Do that. Yeah. Master those before you move on to appending, because appending gets really weird, especially if you don't know exactly what's going to the file, you end up with files that are totally screwed up. From experience.
Just letting you know what's out there, but we're sticking with this. And so I've got a now Rhymes file again opened up, and I'm using dot write. Before we use dot read, now we're using dot write, and as an argument I'm passing in my string file. This is what we want to write to the file. And then when that's complete, I close it again.
Cool.
And then we print out file converted to lowercase.
That's just to let you know that it's done.
Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not actually checking to see if it worked, but there's no error. You know, it's pretty sure it worked. So I'm just going to pop over to the file itself just so you can see. Here it is in all caps. Some rhymes I wrote.
It's very angry, right?
Yeah. This guy likes to scream a lot. All right. So now we'll run this.
It's processing.
File converted.
There you go. Yep. It pulled it in. Fast. It ran the function on it, and it pushed it back out. So
that
now
fast.
If you go back.
That's right. If I go back now, they're all lowercase.
Oh, cool.
So now it's like happy. No more angriness.
That would be perfect for YouTube comments.
Now, Dale, let me ask. Actually, you could use the YouTube API to read all comments and put them all in lowercase to make them less threatening. This is, you know what? Actually, if someone does that, we will feature that on the next show, right?
Actually,
oh, that's great.
Actually, the YouTube API does not officially support comments in V3.
But I've used it to get comments before. You just have to dig around a little bit. So advanced program.
Not V2, yes, not V3.
Now, if there was a way to push it back up and replace all the uppercase,
that would be awesome.
No, that's different. Okay, Dale, now we've shown them some very basic stuff here. What do you think would be a 101 appropriate homework example? So, of course, we want them to pull in from a file.
I know what I'm going to do.
We know what she's going to do. She's going to be doing some of those reservations, the invitation things. But then we want them to do some sort of processing and push out. What would you say is the homework for our Coding 101 crew?
Let's see. We're still kind of on sorting. Maybe they can sort something and pop it back out to a file.
You know what? How about this? Remember how we showed numbers, right?
Right.
So figure out a way to pull in numbers from an external file like I did, sort them, and push them back out. I will give you a hint. If you just pull the numbers in with the code that we've given you without changing anything, it's not going to sort properly. You need something. I don't know, maybe a function that we've played with before that makes sure that they're actually integers that can be sorted. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I know.
Stop.
I want to figure out how to alphabetize them and then sort them like that.
There you go. Actually, there's a function for that. So here's the nice thing about this. This is what we really want to see in the next episode. We gave you all this basic stuff, but the functions that we've started to show you are just the tip of the iceberg. If you go anywhere to a Python primer, you're going to find dozens, hundreds, thousands of different built-in functions that you can call right now to play with that data and then push it out. This is where it gets, yes. gets exciting, folks.
It does.
This is it. You've just been given the great circle of life from Python. You can now take data in, you can process it and push it out.
Now I want to hold a line up and be like, the code of life.
Oh, sorry. That was totally wrong. We should never do that again. No. Dale, thank you so very much. I'm going to put you on the spot here. What do you think we can do for next week? We've got two episodes left. I'm thinking...
Just two?
I know, right?
Already?
Yeah. I know.
Wow.
We need to start That's doing fast. Something crazy. So if we were going to get a little cray-cray, what would we be doing?
Didn't we do that last week?
Well, no, that was minorly cray-cray.
Okay.
I'll let you think about it, but where's your mind going?
Ooh, okay. Maybe, I don't know, do you still not want to talk about installing... new modules? Or?
Oh, no. Yeah, we have to do that. Okay. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's very good. Because anyone who's going to be programming for like Python, programming for the Raspberry Pi,
yeah.
they're absolutely going to have to know how to do that.
Good point.
Yeah, bring in other libraries. Dale Chase, Discovery Digital Networks. Now, Brian, if you could drop a little bit of his music right now. You need to tell the folks where they can find you. Because, again, you're not just a programmer. You don't just work for Discovery Digital. You are an artiste. We're hearing some of your work behind us. Tell us all about it.
That's right. This is a track that's off of my latest full-length, Type Def, featuring King Phoenix on this one. But, yeah, you can find me at dchase.bandcamp.com. Or dalechase.com. But yeah.
Oh, don't mind
that. I'm sorry, no. Dale Chase, it's awesome. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so very much for sharing your Code Warrior knowledge. And folks, we'll see them next week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Peace.
Talk to you later.
Now, we know that we've kind of blown your mind a little bit. This was a lot of stuff, okay? But a little bit of review is always good. So we're going to see you next week, and hopefully you'll have played with pulling data in, sorting, doing something
exciting,
to it, pushing
though.
It out.
I love this episode.
Exciting, right?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it.
I like the fact that as we approach the end of this module, we are really giving the folks a full circle view of Python, right?
I totally agree.
Actually can do something useful with what we've just given you.
Sure, this is all like, it's all like the little beginner points, but you can combine them all and make your own interesting, really cool scripts. So I can't wait to see what people show us.
Yeah. Now, if you have any trouble with what we've just given you, don't forget you can always find detailed instructions. You can find detailed notes at our show page. Just go to twit.tv/coding, and you're going to find this, which has all of our episodes along with the notes for each and every single project, and also a link to the GitHub that will include the Stubbs compiled. So include all of Stubbs' code. It will include my code, and it will include Dale's code, so you can have a character for character copy of every piece of code that we've used on this week's show.
And of course, don't forget, we're also on iTunes. I'm so excited to be found on iTunes. Apparently, a lot of people have been subscribing over there, and you should be one of them so that you can be an iCoder as well. And make sure to spread the word with all your friends and family. Anybody that you think would be interested in Coding 101, we would really appreciate it.
Even if you don't think they'll be interested in Coding 101, if you think your code is going to be featured, then yeah, you should probably be telling them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You can also find us on YouTube at youtube.com/twitcoding101. Again, you find all of our episodes there, along with any other projects that we start putting together. We know that a lot of you don't watch us on YouTube, but it's always there as a possibility in case you need some coding goodness.
Yes, go to our Google Plus page. That's our most exciting community. We have, I think, around 1,000
people. Yeah, we're getting up there.
Now.
What is that?
Yeah.
Oh, we're almost there.
Almost there.
I'm saying by next week we're at 1,000.
Look at all the people in there that are compiling code and sharing it with us. And you can be one of them. And if you want to share your code and ask around if you have any problems, everybody's very friendly in there and very, very helpful. I've even had a few questions, and they've helped me solve a few problems myself. You can go over to plus.google.com/twitcoding101.
Right. And, you know, we've said before, the best way to become a programmer is just poke around. And if you want to poke around, the Google Plus community is a great way to make sure you're poking
in
the right place.
Check out the code.
Yeah, please
do.
It's the
best place.
Now, if you're not into the Google Plus groove, you can also find us on that Twitter thing. You can find me at PadreSJ. That's twitter.com/PadreSJ.
And I'm twitter.com/snubs.
Mm-hmm. Now, one last note. We actually do this show live every Thursday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time.
Oh, I always forget about that.
I know, right? And you get to see the pre-show, which... actually goes on a long time, and the post show and everything in between that maybe doesn't make it into the final cut. And as long as you're doing that, they can also find us at our chat room, right?
Yeah. What's our chat room? IRC.twit.tv.
Oh, and the channel's at live.twit.tv. Jump in there. You see us actually talking to the chat room during the show. And who knows, maybe you'll get featured on Coding 101.
Definitely.
Yeah. Until next time.
That's it for today.
Yeah, I'm Father Robert Balliser.
I'm Shannon Morse.
End of line.